sixth lecture to Pat's Boston High School class, March 25, 1967, an unpublished Seth session. Seth, now dear friends, there is never any justification for war, and there is never any justification for killing. It is true, basically, there is no death, but this cannot be used as an excuse within your sense system. You have created death within your system. Since you have created it, you are left to deal with it. As long as you believe that a bullet can kill a man, then it behooves you not to kill. When you realize that a bullet cannot kill a man, then you will not need to kill. All you have lived before, and many of you will live in physical form again. Some of you will be finished with earthly reincarnations after this life. There is a boy in a third or fourth seat, back from the front in the left now, toward the hall. He is on the last reincarnation within this system. All of you have but one responsibility, and that responsibility is to the self. Not necessarily to the self as you know it, but to the whole self. It is your responsibility, you see, to develop all your abilities. It is your responsibility to materialize within your own system your own potentials. I am no beady-eyed spirit. I am no granddaddy long-legs of the spirit world. I have simply lived before within your system and on your planet. Unless you have read the material, it does me little good to go deeply into any specifics or questions, since you will not have the background for this. The only message I can give you clearly is that you must develop your own abilities. You must probe into the intuitive self, for you will find much knowledge there. Books will help you, but the greater knowledge is buried within the layers of the self. You all have abilities, and you all have liabilities. Both of these come from past experiences in other lives. The inner portions of your personality know the details of your past lives. The abilities that you have now have been developed in past lives. Those problems which you cannot solve on a psychic and mental level, you will have to solve in the physical system. You will have to work out these problems in sense data. That is why the abilities within your system are still working within the systems of war. There is no heaven and hell in Christian terms. However, if a personality believes strongly in the reality of hell, for some time after death he will experience the hallucination of a hell which will be of his own creation. This will last very briefly. Heaven and hell indeed are mere representations. They represented originally intuitive insights, but no heaven or hell exists in those terms. There is no place within the universe or within any universe or system for them. You create reality according to your beliefs and expectations. Therefore, it behooves you to examine your beliefs and expectations very clearly. Your lives at this point are the results of your own inner expectations. If you did not like your lives, then examine your expectations. Your future lives will be the result of your own expectations again. Change these expectations now, if need be. Every thought in one way or another is constructed by you in physical terms. You cannot escape the result of one thought. Every thought is an actuality. It affects every action and it forms your physical environment. As you sit listening to my voice, you are all subconsciously forming the physical environment of your classroom. You are forming the physical chairs. You are forming the blackboard. You are all forming reality as you know it. Then, with your physical senses, you are perceiving that which you have already so created. If you do not like what you see, then who is to blame? For these are your own constructions, formed in healthful replica to your own thoughts. We do not have the time to explain now how this is done, but in the material we have explained it. Certain telepathic connections exist, which are what we term root assumptions, of which you are all telepathically aware. Using these, you form a physical environment that is cohesive enough so that you can all agree with what you see and feel and smell and touch. It is all in one respect hallucinatory. And yet it is your reality, and you must deal with it. If you do not like the looks of the adult world, then you had better change your own expectations now. The world in which your parents live is a world which they created. It existed first in thought. It existed first in mental realms. It existed first as the stuff of dreams. And from this they spawned their universe. And from this they made their world. It is the world in which you now will live. And if you will not face their problems, if you cannot solve their dilemma, it will not be their fault, but your own. For you also have a hand in this. Every generation sits by. The young generation sits by, apparently helpless, while the parents rule the world. But the young, helpless ones mature, and they grow, and they become parents. They become adults. But what about their world? What changes do they make? How many of them, after criticizing their elders, look inward into their own hearts? How many demand that they use their own potentials? How many demand the best of themselves? And it is this that you must do. Anything less is disaster. The exploration of inner space, this is your mission. I will lead you into more exciting realms than any you can imagine. It will literally reshape and remake your world. If you see but one item within your universe and it disgusts you, then look within yourself, for you have helped create it. You can change it in physical terms if you will. But no real change will be affected, for it will spring up again in new form. Any true progress is mental progress. You must change ideas if you would change the world. If you would end war, you must change yourself. It is the idea of war, then, that you must fight. You will find exactly what you wish to find. You will make of your lives exactly what you expect to make of your lives. The beauties that exist in your physical universe are the results of constructive and positive thought. The ugliness is a direct result of negative thought. How many of you are ill? How many of your parents are ill? The illness is a physical materialization of an inner illness. You can rid yourself of the physical symptoms, perhaps by taking medicine. But the illness will break out again and again. You can only rid yourself of such a condition by discovering the inner reason for it, by discovering the inner illness. And there are various ways of doing this. Many of these we have discussed in our sessions, and there is no time now to tell you. Look where nothing seems to be, for no place is truly empty. Where there appears to be nothing, there will be no distortion. Within that seeming nothingness, reality can show itself if you know how to look. That which appears full, that space which appears full, is misleading, for reality is already given to a rigid form. Anything that you can see and feel and touch exists within your own reality, yes, and within it. It is legitimate and valid. It is also highly distorted, for your physical senses are lovely liars that betray you constantly. They form reality for you, and yet the reality that they form is highly distorted, and what you see, dear friends, does not exist, and you do not see what does exist. I regret the little time I have to speak to you. I regret also the necessary limitations put upon me by this method of communication. Nevertheless, I speak to you in terms of fondest affection. The voice which we must necessarily use, it unfortunately devoid now of humor. And yet I am indeed a man of humor. I give you all indeed my blessing, for I do have blessings to give. Look around you at your surroundings. Look within your surroundings. Do not trust what you see. Note, end of part one. See Jane's notes at the end of session for the circumstances surrounding her delivery of this material. Most unusual. Reference, TES 7329. Copy, in possession of Asuman Atlan. Posted on her Facebook, May 25, 2014. Part 2, Seth's lecture to Pat's Boston High School class, March 25, 1967. Jane resumed the lecture to Pat's students after a short rest. Our discussion of the material in Part 1 led us to believe to the continuance of the lecture, since we hadn't planned it this way. Jane's trance was now deeper, her pace faster, and very emphatic. Her voice began to go deeper and louder. The volume became very loud, though not as loud as it has been on a few occasions. Her eyes were closed for the most part, and she sat leaning forward in her chair. Seth, I am still addressing your students. You are all older than you know. There is knowledge within you that you do not realize that you possess, and you can use this knowledge. You may think that you are 16 years old. You may think that you have existed for a certain number of years. You may think that before that time you knew nothing. You may look back to a time and remember no identity, and you wonder, who was I then, and how did I come here? And yet a portion of you knows the answer, and a portion of you knows who you are. And the memories of your previous lives are not in your genes or in your chromosomes, but in the psychic reality that forms the genes and the chromosomes. For the identity is a different identity than the name that you bear. The physical mechanism has chromosomes indeed, but the physical chromosomes have a psychic counterpart, and the psychic counterpart is the original. And within you is the codified information containing all your past lives and all your knowledge. And it is hidden so deep within you that the subconscious, as you know it, does not realize the truth. For the subconscious, as you know it, is indeed a very shallow affair, containing only those hidden memories from this life. But beyond this life, and before this life, and forming this life, there are identities, and there are realities, and these are not dead. Identity, as experience, is intimate. It is a psychic reality, but it exists electromagnetically. Identity, the self that you are, is made up of the selves that you were, and, my dear friends, the selves that you shall be. The selves that you were still exist. The selves that you shall be already exist. The lives that you have lived, in your terms, are still being lived. There is no past, present, or future. Time, as you know it, is a distortion brought about by the operation of the physical senses. Direct experience has no need of physical time. You exist now, period. The past, the present, and the future as you know them are illusion, and yet they exist now. You can influence the past today. You can have memory of the future. You can draw upon the knowledge of the future today. You can change the past tomorrow. Your time is valid only within your system, and it is not particularly valid within your system. The dreams that you dream are as real as the classroom in which you sit. The dreams that you dream form your today. You are, in some respects, more awake when you sleep than you are when you sit in your classroom and listen to my voice. Your dreams appear as illusion to your normal waking self. Shall I tell you how your normal waking experiences appear to your dreaming self? Shall I tell you which of the two realities are more valid and which is least distorted? Shall I tell you where your abilities do originate? Do you think your abilities originate within the self that sits in the classroom? What does your inner reality have to do with the self that brushes your teeth? Yet surely you are wide awake when you brush your teeth, and when you dream, surely you will say you are sleeping and your consciousness is dead. How dead is sleeping consciousness? And where do you travel when you sleep? How many miles do you cover in a day? How many miles do you cover in a dream? How many things do you learn in a dream? You learn more things in a dream than you learn in this classroom. You learn your identity in a dream state. You have experiences even while you dream, chat, are more real and more valid than any that you have while your eyes are wide open. This does not mean that you must not manipulate within the physical universe. I am not telling you that you should forget your responsibilities in physical life. I am telling you that the origin and ability and power and identity has its origins deep within the personality, and that these origins have little to do with the waking self of which you are all so familiar. The self that sits in class is not the self that wanders in a dream state. And the self that wanders in a dream state is, my dear friends, far more educated than the self that sits in the classroom. The self you call yourself, what does it know? To whom must it listen? The self that you call yourself knows relatively little. It is perhaps 16 years old. Indeed, the inner reality knows. And the inner identity knows what it knows. All of you are on a threshold. Uncounted millions have been at this threshold. If you sell yourselves, this is what you will do. You will say, I am a physical organism, and I live within the boundaries cast upon me by space and time. I am at the mercy of my environment. If you do not sell yourselves, you will say, I am an individual. I form my physical environment. I change and I make my world. I am free of space and time. I am part of the good mind. I am more than I know that I am, and there is no place within me that creativity does not exist. I will form the physical universe according to the picture that exists within my mind. I cannot kill, for there is only life, and life cannot be killed. Those of you who would change your world, then I tell you, listen. For if you would change your world, you must listen to the voice within yourself. You must examine your own dreams. You must inspect the innermost portions of yourself. And from this indeed shall you be resurrected. For the thought shall seed the world, and the world shall seed the universe. The cowering soul is indeed the soul who believes himself a physical being. He is therefore at the mercy of every physical camouflage. He does not realize that he is what he is. He must live in the world he has created, and it is a miserable and cruel world. The human personality is free. Any limitations are those created by itself. If you cannot be limited, then do not create artificial limitations. If you would see through space and time, then do not give any validity to the distortions of space and time. You can hardly follow your dreams while you consider your dreams hallucinations. You can hardly grow into your full potential if you think you are a physical creature bounded and limited by the physical limitations of time and space, soon to fall corrupted into an earthly and filthy grave. If you think that is what you are, then for all practical purposes, for now, that is what you shall be. If you realize, on the other hand, that you are unlimited, that you are a part of all that is, then indeed it shall be so as it is. Shatter, then, these artificial boundaries that you have set upon yourselves and that you have accepted from others. If you are to grow older within your system, then mature within it. Do not grow old into senility. Grow into wisdom, for the wisdom is already within you. The self that you shall be already exists. If you will realize your potential, then you will find it is already accomplished. And now I give you my good evenings and my blessings, and say good evening again to you all. Note, ends about 12 p.m. See Jane's notes beginning on the next page. See also the 334th session and the additional data about Pat's class, the room, layout, etc., including the map drawn by Pat. Continue note 2. On a visit on April 15, Pat verified as much as possible the data Seth gave in the 334th session. She also confirmed as much as possible, apparently, the projection Jane achieved to the Boston classroom during the session. The 329th session. End note. Reference TES 7, 329. Personal copy, Osman Atlan, as published on her Facebook page, May 24, 2014. Part 3, March 27, 1967, notes on Seth session held Saturday, March 25, 1967, for Pat Norelli by Jane Roberts. Note, the session was particularly interesting from several standpoints as far as I was concerned. The Seth voice did come through to some considerable extent in the last portion of the session addressed to Pat's students. While the voice was not as unique, as low in pitch, or as resounding as it has been on some occasions, it was definitely apparent at times during the session, and sometimes it was quite startling. This is the first time in some while that the voice has come through. Incidentally, we do tend to discourage it, since at full strength it is very strange and causes comments among our neighbors. The night of the session, it literally swept me along toward the end, and I want to make these comments while the affair is fresh in my mind. There seems no doubt that when the voice attains a certain pitch or intensity, something clicks, and 7 a.m. simply out of it. There is a sense of great power sweeping me away and off. While this is happening, I am in no condition to critically analyze my own state of consciousness. During this session, part of it at least, I seemed to be viewing a classroom, presumably Pat's. At first I looked down upon the room from above, then moved to a vertical position, searching for a particular seat. Here Seth mentioned a boy who sat there. I have no doubt that if Rob had questioned me, I would have been able to describe the room. No one asked Seth to do so, and of course, all this time he was speaking through me in this voice of his. I think, though now it is difficult to recall, that I saw one rather long, continuous blackboard. Perhaps nearly across one whole wall, I was aware, though Seth didn't say so, that the list seats were unusually empty. Continuing note, while the voice boomed out toward the end, I was in that classroom, certainly not in our living room. The emotional projection, at the very least, was very strong, speaking out to those students. But some kind of out-of-body projection also occurred. This simply was. I could not critically comment on it at the time. I had some difficulty coming out of the trance state and did not realize the fact of the projection critically until I lay in bed. Questions, of course, instantly come to mind. Who was in the classroom, Seth or me? One possibility is that I do the projecting while Seth controls the physical body and uses the vocal cords to speak and to give verbal expression. I would be the perceptive mechanism in the other location while he would translate the perceptions and communicate them in physical terms. In a usual out-of-body state, it would be highly difficult for me alone to communicate my perceptions until I returned. There is no doubt that Seth comes through much more clearly when the voice turns on. It is at its best. There is an odd, distant quality about it, as if it comes from a long way off, and a funny surging in it. It gains tremendous power, but this seems to happen when a certain volume is reached. The volume is somewhat objectionable in our circumstances, living in an apartment. Perhaps this volume is a method I have chosen subconsciously to click Seth in. If so, surely the two of us could find another method, or certainly control the volume. While still allowing the strange buildup that precedes the clicking in, I was in a very deep trance the night of the session, which deepened as the session continued. Had Rob asked questions about the room, or had someone asked again about the young man's mother's maiden name asked earlier, I am certain that Seth could have given the information, that I would have gone out of it while he spoke and controlled the mechanism. I was in no condition to offer, or indeed to make any critical judgment at the time, and Seth was fully focused in delivering the statement to the students, however. I had thought, when the session was over, of suggesting we do this, but I was exhausted, even though I knew I was having trouble snapping out of the trance. Definitely Pat's desire for the whole session was a contributing point. I reacted to her desire, just as I react negatively to someone who is highly critical. I must react to need in this respect, and it seems necessary at this point that I feel perfectly comfortable and safe before I allow Seth to take over so completely. Yet, it is not Seth's taking over that concerns me, for when he does take over, I'm not afraid at all. It is the idea of leaving myself vulnerable to criticism, I suppose. A note here. Seth told Pat that she had a strong interest in history, which could be utilized, along with a writing ability. Then Pat told us that she majored in history in college. We just took it for granted she majored in English, since she teaches it. Seth mentioned a boy who sat in a third or fourth seat in a specific row also given. Had he said, for example, the fifth or sixth, this would have been wrong, since Pat told us the students only sit four down. Again, I'm led to see that good sitters are a definite benefit. Bad sitters, of course, would simply be those that were distracting or pulled against me, I suppose, or those who demanded too much. A desire on the part of a sitter to know or understand is a help. Reference TES 7329. Copy and possession of Asuman Atlan, per her Facebook post on May 25, 2014.